This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So a bunch of the most prominent teachers from the early Buddhist tradition are all together practicing. So maybe it's practice period or something. And Pali Sutras usually have a formula. So there's like a repeated part that they say over and over again. And the formula in this is something like, Shariputra said to Ananda, "It is so beautiful on this moonlit night in the salawood tree forest with the flowers blooming and the scent of flowers filling the air. What kind of practice could adorn the salawood tree forest?" And Ananda is like, says something like, "Well, remembering the teachings of the Buddha, that's the practice that would adorn the salawood tree forest." Which, if you know Ananda, that's characteristic. He's famous for remembering all the teachings. And then I can't remember if, like, then Ananda asks someone else. So Ananda asks Moggallana, and Moggallana is famous for having like supernatural powers. And Moggallana is like, "Well, using the divine eye to see all beings everywhere is how a monk could adorn the salawood tree forest." And then Moggallana, I'm kind of making up the details, turns to Kashyapa or something, and Kashyapa says, "Well, dwelling in complete meditative concentration in the plane of peace and serenity." And they go down, and there's all these different people, and they say, one person says, "Talking the Dharma face to face with a companion on the path." And another one says, I can't remember. You kind of get the idea, though, all these different methods. And each time it's like, how could you adorn this incredible situation? Which you hear over and over in this text. How do you adorn the Dharma realm? It's already so incredibly beautiful, like bejeweled. There's jewels falling from the sky onto a tree made of jewels, on an earth made of jewels. How are you going to adorn that? I'm not kidding. How are you going to adorn that? Or are you already adorning it? So anyway, they all go through this, and they all have all their different methods. And then the Buddha shows up. And there's quite a few sutras that are like this. Everyone says their own thing, and then the Buddha shows up, and they go, "Well," he's like, "What were you guys talking about?" And then they usually repeat the entire thing. It's very standard. But fortunately, in a lot of modern translations, you get dot, dot, dot. So anyway, they repeat the entire thing. And then I think it's Shariputra says, "So which one of us is right?" And he says, "You're all right. That's all complete. And as for me, being mindful of what's in front of me and living with just a bowl." So different kinds of people, different kinds of practice. And I love the sutra a whole lot. But then it's useful to note that everyone in the story is a man. So I generally don't spend a lot of my time talking about the limitations of the textual tradition. But if you read this whole thing, there'd be stuff in there that make you go, "Oh, that's gross, you know. Somewhere in here, there's like some guy who's really amazing and he has like 500 wives." It's like, I don't think it's a good idea. Pretty sure my wife wouldn't like it. I'll say that. So anyway, yeah. But we see also in that limitation that the Dharma is not a perfection that's complete, but is a process. A relational process of liberation. And that's all we get. Because even if you're like, "Ooh, nirvana, that sounds pretty final. The Buddha got nirvana." Well, what did he do? Then he wandered around for years helping people. a relational process of liberation. So I think I wrote some notes. I'm going to find out if I plan to do anything else. Yeah, so I want to talk about the purifying practice section of the Falun Gong Sutra. So this sutra basically just starts out, someone says, like, how do bodhisattvas do all this awesome stuff? And the list of awesome stuff is quite awesome and rather long, surprisingly. How do they free all beings from suffering? How do they realize the divine eye? How do they manifest wisdom at all times? How are they radically mindful in every moment? You know, and so on. Wow. And then the chapter consists of something like 150 four-line verses. Got this. And every one of them says something like, when you're brushing your teeth, you should say, can everyone get the sharp eye teeth of wisdom? Or when I'm washing my hands, can everyone be pure and free from the causes of suffering? Or when I see a lake, can I wish that everyone have a mind as still and clear as a lake? So this kind of thing. And so I don't think you have them here, but actually it's quite common in Zen temples to have little gatas all over the building. I should know. They're probably written by Dogen. I don't know. Anyway, but they're, you know, things. I remember there used to be one outside the toilet that, you know, as I go to the toilet, may I eliminate all defilements. I remember that one most distinctly for some reason. Do you all do during morning services ever the refuge vows where it's like, oh, shoot, I take refuge in the Dharma. May all beings deeply enter the teachings, wisdom like the sea. No, this is very common. It's very standard Soto Zen liturgy. And at probably most Zen temples where they have liturgy, this is part of a morning service that happens either once a week or even maybe once a day. And these are actually, they're right from this text. And they use them also in the Bamboo Forest tradition, which my friend Tuan Bach practices. My beloved, venerable colleague. So this thing, there's a little pivot in how they appear in the Avatamsaka, because they, I think they were about to see, but they say something like, when you do this, when a bodhisattva does the whatever the thing is, when they eat, get a bowl of food, they should wish that all beings be nourished, or something like that. And the pivot is, it generally in Zen texts, instead of saying you should wish this, we just wish it. So it's like, when I'm taking this food, wishing that all beings be nourished, which I think might be pretty much part of our meal service. Although I don't have the exact language down. So they just, that the text is saying this is what a bodhisattva does or what one should do. And when we chant very similar texts, we just are wishing that. And you know, I don't know if you're like me, I've spent a fair amount of my time being like, how can eating this food benefit all beings? Because mostly I'm the one enjoying it. You know what I mean? How does that work? If you want to spend some time figuring out how it works, that is okay. We can eat in a way that's more conducive to the well-being of the world. I think everyone knows that. You can eat in ways that are less conducive and more conducive. And if you, my experience is, having sat and said, I'm receiving this food for enlightenment as medicine to sustain all beings, after a few hundred times, my patterns of eating changed. You know, sometimes it may seem like, oh, I'm just saying this thing over and over again. What's going on? But sometimes it actually changes what happens in the world, because what we do is stuff that's happening in the world. And it might just feel nice at some point to to be like, oh, I'm washing my hands for everyone. You know, like I'm washing my hands and not even know I'm washing my hands, a style that you and I are probably familiar with. It's like, you know, it's like something that happens while you're going to do something else. So we have mindfulness from the early tradition to be like, whoa, what is this? And in the first foundation of mindfulness is called clear comprehension, actually seeing what's directly in front of you. But that's, you know, it's pretty good, but it's a little dry. What about like, ooh, I'm washing my hands for other beings. And, you know, you may say it a million times and be like, oh, wow, this, you should never have put this mirror in front of me. This is terrible. Fix my hair. Kind of not realistic. I don't even want to, never mind. I give up. Okay, so you know, when I put on these ritual garments and I try and take care of them, can I do that because I care about everyone in the world? Not just be like, how am I going to appear to everybody? Or, oh, if I put these on, now I'll be important. How the quality of intentionality that we bring to moments, according to Buddhist philosophy, is actually what creates the world. Most people I know are conditioned to believe that there's a material reality that's absolutely real. We have some kind of perception of it, and manipulating that material reality is what matters. That is a standard Western worldview. That may sound fancy, but if you really take it apart, you'll see that that's how people's conduct often works. Buddhist philosophy is non-materialist, and it radically emphasizes that the quality of intentionality you put into each moment is what is creating the world and everyone else. The world as experienced by sentient beings, which is a subject of interest in Buddhism. So, yeah, let's wake up some liberative intentions. Okay, so what I want to do here with this, oh, I just want to recite a poem before I do the next thing. Poem from Daughters of Emptiness, one of my favorite collections of poetry. It's a bunch of Chinese Buddhist nuns' poems. And this poem is by a Zen nun, and I think it really reflects kind of how the purifying practice sutra's attitude shows up in the basic expression of Zen. Kedu says, drop off the body. The river of the world will never end. Stately and grand, nothing to show but the inner master. When morning comes, change the water, light the incense. Everything is in the ordinary affairs of the everyday world. And I'll just recite it again. Drop off the body, the river of the world will never end. Stately and grand, nothing to show but the inner master. When morning comes, change the water, light the incense. Everything is in the ordinary affairs of the everyday world. Wonderful translation from Beatrice Grant. Okay, so I want to talk about chanting. This is a thing that you can do. I think we're doing it. Has anyone been like, I think everyone's chanting, which is cool. And chanting is wonderful. There's so many ways to do it. I just got some inspiration. I was at a Heiji, which is the main training temple or the original training temple for Soto Zen in Japan a couple months ago. And the I don't know his title, but the head training monk came and gave a talk to us, the visitors, and he talked for a half an hour, and then he said, I'm supposed to talk for an hour and I don't have any more material. And he basically just chanted for a half an hour. And it was very nice. And there was really wonderful. Well, actually, he was at Sojiji, now that I think of it. But there was amazing chanting there in Adeheiji. And so I want to do some chanting with you all. So you chant a lot of ways. So I'm going to like be inviting you to chant a particular way. And I think how I want to do this is I want, what, can we stand up? Because, and then we can make a little more room in the circles. So the reason I want to do this is it helps. So sitting in our upright meditative posture or our chanting posture or standing is it's beneficial. So sitting in these kind of chairs is not very good for chanting. Plus, maybe you're getting enough time to sit. I'm not sure. So I'm going to invite y'all to actively, well, actually, let's do this first. I'm going to invite you to bring your attention to the sensations of breathing in the belly. And now I'm going to invite you to put your right hand like on the low end of your belly, so kind of on the waist. And then maybe your left hand, well, you can just let your left hand touch, maybe both hands on the belly. That's good. And now, for about a minute, I'm going to invite you to really actively draw air down into the lower belly as you breathe in. So long, deep breaths that are, you could feel like drawing air into the belly or pushing air down into the bowl of the pelvis. You might feel this as using the breath to push the hands out and down. For some people, this may kind of feel like I can't even figure out how to do that, and that's okay. Just trying to feel your way towards here, way down, and we're looking for long, deep breaths. Because we're really using the whole of our lungs, this breath may be able to slow down, well, quite a bit, possibly. But if not, that's okay. Well, let's just let go of the controlled breathing for a moment. Just let the hands rest. And now I'm going to invite you to take a few breaths where what we're going to do is we're going to breathe quite briefly. I'll demonstrate so you hear the sound of it. What we use all that capacity to bring air down low, but it's going to happen fast, and then we're going to let it go slowly. So I'm going to. You can just try this using the same energy that was drawing air low, but quick intake of air. Maybe just one more like that. Just release and breathe naturally. So now, when we're chanting, everything is happening when we're chanting, but if the chanting can come from the breath and the ears in a good balance, good things happen. So with the breath that I was working on there, the idea is when we need to pause, we just pause and bring all that air in, quickly and fully, not a gasp, but a, and then we have room. Gate, gate, para, gate, para, some gate, bodies, fa, gate, right? Whoosh. So then I want to talk about the ears. So traditionally, as I understand it, in Soto Zen, usually people chant in octave. So people who are male usually chant in a pretty low note, like Avalokiteshvara, and people who are women usually chant one octave higher. Avalokiteshvara. Now, of course, gender is an incredible rainbow. So you can really chant where you want to, depending on whatever your gender is and who you are. But that may kind of help you to find a good place for you. And I will say, for most men, it feels a little weird to chant in that upright. They feel like, wow, so high. Okay. So now, what I think would be great to do is chant the Prajnaparamita mantra a few times. And we're going to throw in one more layer because I'm just having so much fun. With some chanting styles, basically the idea is there's no cessation of the sound. So like when we chant the Heart Sutra this morning, we stop at the end of each line. That's great. But with something like the rope chant, the idea is there's no pause. So you can breathe in the middle of the line so that you can sing through the end of the line. And everyone is staggered, so the sound just keeps going. So what I want to do is chant, and you know, you may never really figure out how to do this ever again, but that's okay. We know gate, gate, para, gate, para, sam, gate, bodhisattva. Gate, gate, para, gate, para, sam, gate, bodhisattva, gate. We're just going to keep going. But at the end of the phrase, don't stop. Well, you breathe when you need to breathe. And when you breathe, you go, and keep going. Okay, choir practice. Gonna be good. I'll chant the first one and then we can just join in. Oh, do we have a bell in here?
Yes.
Because what I'll do is on the last one, I'll ring a bell. This is the last one and then we'll stop.
For those of you who don't know this mantra, it's on page 5 at the very bottom.
Gate, gate, para, gate, para, sam, gate, bodhisattva. Gone, gone, gone beyond, completely gone beyond, awake, so be it. I'd say the first one along. Gate, gate, para, gate, para, sam, gate, bodhisattva, gate, gate, para, gate, para, sam, gate, bodhisattva, gate, gate, para, gate, para, sam, gate, bodhisattva, gate, gate, para, sam, gate, bodhisattva. Gate, gate, para, gate, para, sam, gate, bodhisattva, gate, gate, para, gate, para, sam, gate, bodhisattva, gate, gate, para, gate, para, sam, gate, bodhisattva, gate, gate, para, gate, para, sam, gate, bodhisattva. Okay, so now I want to chant the Flower Garland Sutra. So the next thing, if you can get your little book, you know, we can sit down. This maybe get tired, or you can sit down or stand up, whatever feels good to you about that. But this, we're going to chant for a while, so get ready. It'll be a little similar to the reading period this morning, but we'll just be chanting together. So it's the purifying practices section, which is probably about 6 or 7 sheets into your document. And
313.
So 313 on the top, but it'll be about 5 or 6 sheets into your packet. So purify and cleanse. So the preface, we're not going to chant the preface, but it's just basically to paraphrase, how can bodhisattvas attain excellent discernment, foremost discernment, supreme discernment, immeasurable discernment, inconceivable discernment, emptiness, signlessness, wishlessness? How can they fulfill the means of transcendence, generosity, self-control, tolerance, effort, meditation, and wisdom? How can they fulfill kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity? Get the idea. Mm-hmm. So we'll start just at the first verse here, which says, enlightened beings at home should wish that all beings realize the nature of home is empty. And we'll just chant for kind of a long time. So just breathe when you need to breathe. That's good. That's why we have friends, is to carry each other along. And on the last verse that we're going to chant together, I'll ring a bell to indicate that we're ending.
Harmonics is a no-no?
I would go just octaves here.
Okay.
It can't be really. I was enjoying the polyharmonies last night. I'm not stopping any longer.
But
anyway, how about if I chant the first verse and then people can join in? And so we'll kind of get a feel for the rhythm. Enlightening beings at home should wish that all beings realize the nature of home is empty and escape its pressures.
Wow. While serving their parents, they should wish that all beings serve the Buddha, protecting and nourishing everyone. While nursing us as children, they should wish that all beings be impartial for everyone and for everyone as attachment. When attaining desires, they should wish that all beings pull at the end, blessed and realize ultimate peace. On festive occasions, they should wish that all beings enjoy themselves with truth and realize amusements not to give. If in palace rooms, they should wish that all beings enter the sanctified state forever being a defiled grading. When putting on the ornaments, they should wish that all beings give up from the aberration and reach the abode of truth. When climbing up in balconies, they should wish that all beings ascend the tower of truth and see through everything. When they heal something, they should wish that all beings be able to relinquish all with highest degree of clinging. When in gatherings or crowds, they should wish that all beings let go of the compounded things that pertain to the knowledge. If in danger and difficulty, they should wish that all beings be free and unhindered wherever they go. When they give up home life, they should wish that all beings have no ignorance of leaving home and that their minds be liberated. Entering the monastery, they should wish that all beings expound various principles of non-consensual according to spirits and teachers. They should wish that all beings carefully serve their teachers
and practice
virtuous ways, seeking initiation. They should wish that all beings reach the non-regressing state, their minds without impediment, shedding the lay clothing. They should wish that all beings cultivate roots of good and abandoning the transgressions.
Taking off their hair, we should wish that all beings forever divorce all affliction and impact on the ultimate tranquility. Coming on with this time, they should wish that all beings be undefiled in mind.
They should wish that all beings
be calm with
the Buddha and rescue all the
home,
taking refuge in the Buddha. They should wish that all beings continue on the unjustly us, conceiving the unexcelled aspiration, taking refuge in the teaching. They should wish that all beings enter deeply into the scriptures that are wisdom being reconstituted. They should wish that all beings order the masses, all becoming free from obstruction and receiving the diverse precepts. They should wish that all beings learn self-control well and not do any wrong.
Receiving a mentor's instruction, they should wish that all beings bear fruit. And that every question be truthful. Receiving a teacher's guidance, they should wish that all beings enter the knowledge of perfectness and reach the state of independence. Receiving a full set of precepts, they should wish that all beings fulfill all means of liberation and master the supreme teaching. They should wish that all beings ascend to the exalted sanctuary of the universe, their receiver, unshakable, mindsetting out of speed. They should wish that all beings cause their principles to bloom and see their true narrative. Sitting out straight, they should wish that all beings sit on the seat of enlightenment, their minds without attachment, sitting cross-legged. They should wish that all beings have firm and strong roots of goodness and in the state of immobility.
This recitation be an offering for the liberation of all beings throughout space and time. Or in other words, when reciting the Flower Garland Sutra, they should wish that all beings be free from suffering and enter liberation. Like a little infinite regress of mirrors. So I didn't plan on this, but the section of the Soto Zen daily service, we chanted it. I just think that I just wanted to point that out to you. It's on the bottom of page 315. It says, taking refuge in the Buddha, they should wish that all beings continue the lineage of Buddhas, conceiving the unexcelled aspiration. Taking refuge in the teaching, they should wish that all beings enter deeply into the scriptures, and their wisdom be as deep as the sea. And taking refuge in the community, they should wish that all beings order the masses, all becoming free from obstructions. So the translation is different, but in our service we say, I take refuge in Buddha, may all beings embody the great way, resolving to awaken. I take refuge in Dharma, may all beings deeply enter the teaching, wisdom like the sea. I take refuge in Sangha, may all beings support harmony in the community with it completely without hindrance. Mm-hmm. And then it goes on from there. So that's kind of amazing. This thing, like sitting around this tome. A crazy thing about this text is it's so gigantic. And there are tiny little pieces of it that have been appropriated and carried through the Buddhist tradition in embodied ways for thousands of years, whereas the vast majority of people have not read this. And I'm well aware that many of you will never look at this again after this weekend. That is A-OK. It's just a big book. It's just a big book. So, daily activity. So, you know, in early Buddhist teachings, there's so much emphasis on noticing, being aware of the body, and having that help us to be aware of whatever feeling, what emotion is here, whatever the mind is doing, the other sensory experiences, consciousness, a sense of that there's something here looking, and really looking at what we might think of as the interiority of experience, or how our experience is constructed by these apparently subjective processes, which is very cool and powerful. And, you know, I am often carrying a particular expression of that which comes through the Yogacara, and I simplify it a lot, and I'll just say it here because I think it really is helpful. Know your body and know how you feel. It really matters. It might seem like really obvious, but I cannot tell you how much, even though I say this a million times and I practice a lot, how often I don't. The mind wants to do a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. And knowing the body and knowing how you feel doesn't mean not doing other things. Actually, consciousness is very malleable and vast. So we can know the body and know how we feel and listen to people, know the body and know how we feel and attend board meetings, know the body and know how you feel and pull weeds. Now I'm kind of segueing, because the emphasis here, there is this emphasis on waking up the bodhicitta, that sense that you want everyone to be free in your heart. But it's not happening by like looking around in there and what are the impediments? Where is it? It's happening like, what are you doing as a body in this apparently external environment? And that's a distinct twist, a distinct shift that is so, I mean, if you start to look for it in Soto Zen culture, it becomes so clear how much it is there. So my sewing teacher, I've had a couple of sewing teachers. My first sewing teacher was Tomoe Katagiri, and then after she couldn't see and couldn't teach anymore, her Dharma heir, Rosemary Taylor, was my sewing teacher. But I like wrote an article about Tomoe-san, and so I got to interview a lot of people about Tomoe-san. Tomoe is, as far as I know so far, the first person to teach the sewing of Zen garments in North America. I checked in with folks at Zen Shuji, which had been there for quite a while, and they were like, yeah, we weren't doing it. They may have been doing a little sewing or something. Anyway, that's my story, because I love it. But it is somewhat researched, and no one has countered it so far. Anyway, when I was doing the interviews about Tomoe, Andrea Martin, who is the editor of the last two or three Katagiri Roshi books, said to me, Tomoe always demonstrated that everything matters. And I studied with her, and she did not tell me very many things. She told me things like, I think you should take those stitches out and do it again. That was something she told me. But mostly, you know, you go over to her house, and then you go into a room and you chant the Heart Sutra and you do some bows, and you sew quietly. Oh. So clearly, I talk too much. Mm-hmm. That's okay, because people have different ways of teaching. Shariputra uses a lot of words. Moggallana just transcends space and time. What's your style? So I want to do one more thing before we part here, which is, this just seems like it would be fun. I'm gonna do this way too. I'm gonna actually ask each person to speak in order. Oh, and all I'm gonna ask you to do is, can you think of some activity that you regularly do, which you would like to bring this kind of vow to? You might be like, well, how do I do that 47 times a day? Well, look for 48, or 46 maybe needs a little more juice. Or you might be like, I've never tried that. And this could be something that's like, tear it really hard. Like, I have someone that I work with and it's horrible. And when I go see that person, I want to see that person so that everyone will be free from suffering. But maybe you're like, I don't want to go there. That's very fraught for me. That's okay. You can be like, washing my hands. That's fine. So you get to pick. But yeah, and this does not have to be like profound. It's not what we're doing here. This is just like, because it's simple. We're talking about daily activity. So I'm going to ask each person to just say a daily activity where you might be interested in doing that, wishing that all beings be free from suffering. and I'm going to start with.
Maybe washing the dishes.
When I wake up at night and I have a little hard time going back to sleep.
On the bird bath.
Make tea so that all beings can be free of suffering.
Drink water so that all beings can be quenched.
Listen patiently so that all beings can be heard.
Getting dressed so that all beings can be free.
Deciding what my partner and I are going to have for dinner so that all beings may be liberated.
Sitting on the toilet so that all beings should be relieved.
Cuddling my dog so that all beings can know love and companionship.
Supporting our 15-year-old daughter and her friends, and also responding to emails about board issues so that all beings may be free from suffering.
Watching sunrise, observing how a day breaks, and first songs of birds, like new day, should be peace to everyone.
Thank you all so much. So I think we're going to go meet up in the Zendo and hopefully sit still for all beings.
But I suppose encourage everyone to look at this calligraphy because it's pretty extreme in its meaning, and so it's very nice to have this sutra to sort of support it. In Japanese, it's mei reiki reiki, so it's three words. At the very bottom is two dots, which means repetition. And mei, the top one, means radiance. Or illumination. And then the Reiki Reiki part means to the fullest extent in every detail.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org. Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.